Oh, it gets you going right there when you hear that. You know, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Woo! Saturday, one full hour of Busted Pencils across, you know, all of those radio stations that make up Civic Media, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota. You're out there, you know, driving around in your car. Like, what is this? Hey, this is Busted Pencils. It's a show about schools, but actually it's a show about democracy. Actually, it's a show about, oh, I wish my neighbor knew this. Actually, it's a show. Oh, just hang on. You'll see. It's me, Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, and Jacob, chairman of the boards. Man, we are back at it. I cannot believe it's Saturday again. You know, again, we always like to say, wherever you are in the, you know, whatever radio station, whatever podcast, streaming, networking, earbud thing you're doing to listen to Busted Pencils, thank you. We appreciate it. You know, we enjoy doing this, and we enjoy knowing that you're out there listening. And just think about this right now. If you're somewhere, you know, up in, you know, the North Woods of Wisconsin, you're listening to a show right now that people in Finland are listening to also. Yeah, that's the reach right there, Johnny and Jacob. You know, Jacob, what do you think about that, man? Finland.
Tim, you know, I think it's a great connection you're making, by the way, to Finland, because this is, I think, I'm not the only one who knows this, but a lot of people know, it's the second show of Christmas, Tim.
Nice.
That's right.
And that's where Santa Claus is truly from.
Santa is from Finland. I think we all know this, and I'm not just trying to butter up our Finnish listeners. Santa's from Finland. There's reindeer there, and they know two things in Finland, Tim. They know reindeer, and they know education.
Yes, they do, and that's why, you know, we're here. Johnny, come on, man. You look like you're making fun of me for making that connection.
I'm not. I'm just, you know, just buckling in for the ride of the Saturday broadcast and, you know, getting up to speed here. And I thought you said Air Bud, which is one of my favorite movies. And you said Earbud.
Earbud, man.
Oh, I was thinking about the basketball playing, the dog that plays basketball.
You know, Spud McKenzie.
No,
that's a different one.
No. We're all over the place today, folks. No, but Tim, I do agree. It's a great time every Saturday when we get to talk about things happening in education. You know, sort of like education car talk. We just chop it up here and talk about things that matter to all of us, whether you're an educator, you know, you're a school leader, whether you're a parent, whether you're a student listening because your parents have the radio on. So we know. Most of us oldies that listen to the radio, but I just say, Tim, it's great to talk through some of these things, and some of the things that we've kicked around this week have been, you know, pretty typical, but one stood out to me, and it's connected pretty locally to, you know, the Wisconsin Examiner putting out some findings of a recent assessment. And we got to check in. This is a little backstory before we dive into it for the listener. We got to check in through our group chat and the various times we cross paths throughout the week about this topic. And we're going to get back into it. Assessing early learners, like pre-K, like four-year-olds, five-year-olds, first graders, second graders, you know, all the way through third grade, like really high stakes assessing around literacy, which I think we all agree, you know, it's important to learn to read. Like we want all of our kids to be strong readers. We're really glad that schools make an avid commitment to teaching children to read. But how we assess it is something we've talked about off and on here on Busted Pencils. And, you know, and here it is again. We have some information about how many of our students are, and I'm going to put scare quotes up because I think it's important to know where students are as learners, That's really important. That's why we assess and gather data. But how many students are labeled quote unquote at risk? Dun, dun, dun. Huh. Right. And so we're going to get into that a little bit today because it always, I don't know, what are the old guys like us say, really grinds my gears. You know what really grinds my gears is calling kids at risk. But then at the same time, Tim, I want to say like when children might be struggling in a particular area, I think it's really important to identify that and provide them with supports. So I'm really interested to talk about this today because I'm on both sides of the coin. I don't like labeling young people, especially kindergartners, as at risk. But then sad thing is there are things that put young learners at risk that they're experiencing. And I think we need to identify those, especially around learning to read is part of it. But here we have some information, Tim, that kind of makes it sound like teachers are doing a bad job or that kids aren't quite as smart as they used to be. Tim, can you tell our listeners what I'm talking about at this point? Because now I'm just going on and on about the topic of how in the world can you determine that a kid in kindergarten is at risk?
Well, Johnny, okay, we're talking about an article that came out this week in the Wisconsin Examiner, and the headline, I always like to start with the headline because that's typically for a lot of people, not that they're poor readers, but they're busy. They see headlines and move on, and headlines sometimes are kind of the nugget that we're stuck with, and let's break this down. So it's Wisconsin school literacy reports identify 36% of students as, quote, at risk. So, Johnny, at risk. At risk for what? Well, again, listen to Wisconsin school literacy reports. So translate reading. So Wisconsin reading, the things that we look at, reports, holy crap, 36% of Wisconsin students, they're at risk. At risk of what? Man, this is what we're going to be talking about here because there's a lot here. And I want to start with first of all, recognizing that, Johnny, this is why this topic really, kind of gets me going because right off the bat, it's the headline that ends up to me being the most troubling aspect of this article. It isn't necessarily the content of the article. It's right away, though, the headline, because as I said, my neighbor, who's, working in the factory, lots of shifts, putting bread and, good things on the table. They caught the headline and I worry because then I'm talking to my neighbor over the fence, and we're out there. He's like, man, can you believe that 36% of our kids can't read? I'm like, dude, where'd you get that from? He goes, it was on the headline. I saw it today in the Wisconsin Examiner. 38%, 36%, that's a lot of kids who can't read. And I'm like, okay, neighbor. And, we're talking about my neighbor, Joe. I'm like, Joe, hold on a minute because we got a lot to talk about here. And so that's kind of how I like to set this up because I think that this is what happens is that we then instantly move on to, hey, what's next in our lives? And we walk around with this, what we think is a fact that, holy crap, 1/3 of kids can't read. And you know what? That is a very troubling statistic or statement. Is it a true fact? Is it a statistic that you can walk around with and actually talk about? No, I think this is what we need to do here, Johnny, is you're saying, assessment, how do we know? What the heck does at risk even mean? all those things, right? And so, you know, there's a complexity, but at the same time, actually, the complexity with a little bit of, you know, help from Tim, Johnny, and Jacob, I think we can get a better sense of what's really going on here. Because, you know, at risk, hey, I also have another neighbor who's just only saw at risk and is like, wow, lots of kids are at risk. Like, you know, at risk for what? Well, and I think that's a better question. But in this one, we're talking about at risk of not being able to read. And that is truly for what we say. You know what? If that's true, that's troubling, because actually we do know that reading is incredibly important and will have long-term effects, influences, and is even very predictable towards later in life, the types of successes and or not that students will face. And so the ability to read is highly, highly cause and effect to, you know, where you're headed in life. So we are worried when kids can't read. But does this really mean that one third of kids in Wisconsin can't read? I'm going to say right now, I don't know that that's necessarily true, Johnny, because you stated it first. It says 4K through third grade. And understand what that means. That means 3 to 4 year olds are typically in 4K. Okay. All the way up to third grade, that could be kids that are 10 years old. So we're looking at a span of essentially potentially age 3 to age 10. And for any of our parents out there listening, going like, oh my God, you know, what my 3-year-old was like as compared to what my 7-year-old was like, world of difference. And yes, let's be honest. What does it mean to be 3? What does it mean to be 7? What does it mean to be 10? It means a lot of things. And what we're talking about here educationally, developmentally, a whole lot is going on in those times. And, you know, I say, especially when we're assessing 3 to 4 year olds, we want to be really careful about making broad statements about what they can and can't do. And so this is what, you know, one of the first places I think we want to talk about. We're talking about, how do you know if a 3 or 4 year old is at risk for potential reading difficulties? You know, and then how do you know that a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old? There's a lot going on there, Johnny. I'm glad we brought this together. You know, we're going to spend some time. But when we come back, I want to get right into 3 and 4 years old. How do we know if they're at risk? Yeah. Hold on. We'll be right back. Come on. We're back. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, at risk for not being able to read. That's what we're talking about here. Actually, Wisconsin Examiner this past week, Wisconsin School Literacy Reports identify 36%, one third of students as at risk for not being able to read. Well, how do you know that? You know, what do you mean at risk? And Johnny, we were talking about, though, too, when you get past the headline, you read a little bit more deeply into the article, you see that we're talking about a sampling of what we say 4K through third grade, And translating that for everybody out there, 4K could be as young as 3 years old, and third grade could be as old as 10. And this is what we're saying, that 36% of 3-4 year old to 10 year olds are at risk of not being able to read. Johnny, how do we know when a 3 or 4 year old is at risk of not being able to read? That is the question. And well, at least according to this article, and actually for anybody who's out there, who's done any of this work, teachers out there, you know, especially, hey, pre-K kindergarten teachers, if you're listening to this show and you're like, wait a minute, we want to hear from you, because God, we would love to actually have some conversations. So, you know, reach out, Busted Pencils, Civic Media, let us know, because we want to talk to you. But yeah, how do you know when a 3 or 4 or 5 year old is at risk of not reading? Well, there are screening tools, Johnny, that public schools administer. Tests, let's be honest, they're tests. And we test our 3, 4, and 5 year olds to see if they are at risk. In other words, do they know their letters? Do they know the sounds the letters make? Are they able to see how bringing certain letters together can form words? Early, quote, assessment there too. And so, you know, we might do things, and I, you know, anybody listening to the show has heard this story before, but it's worth pointing out. My daughter in kindergarten, in her early learning assessment of, is she on track for reading? They used what was called the DIBBLES, the Dynamic Indicator of Basic Early Literacy Test, DIBBLES, to see if she was, quote, at risk. And one of the DIBBLES assessments was how many and how fast can they read nonsense words? And my daughter was not a very fast nonsense word reader, Johnny. And we got a call from the kindergarten teacher pointing out their concern for my daughter's future, because her ability to read nonsense words was not as fluent as it should be. And well, were we worried? No. We weren't, because we said, well, what about her ability to read real words in books? How's she doing on that? And I'm like, well, we didn't check that. I'm like, oh, so maybe if you gave her like a kid's book and asked her to read it, you might not be concerned about her nonsense word fluency rate, and she might not be at risk of reading. Now, that's a privileged position, Jacob, right?
Tim, I suppose we could have her read an actual book. But I mean, we could do a lot of ridiculous things, but I think it's important that we stick to the nonsense words.
And make sure she can read them fast, too, because, you know, fast reading is definitely the sign. So, but I mean, these are some of those things that we kind of come at. And what I'm doing with that story is pointing out, okay, some of these assessments tell us some things, but they don't necessarily tell us all the things that are there. And so when we're looking at these early assessments, I would ask parents to say, you know, so what is it really telling you in this case? Then the other part is this, Johnny, you made this comment during the break. How many kindergarten teachers, and we're putting out a call for all of you out there, how many kindergarten teachers do you know and I know that have said, oh my God, if I could just teach my kids reading instead of testing them all day long, we might actually have something that we could talk about. Johnny, that was your comment, so I'm going to let you ramble on for a little bit.
Well, I don't have a whole lot to ramble on about, Tim, with this, you know. Educated educator talking education. That's rambling. Just to translate for all of our listeners. No, but Tim, you hit on a point, and I would love to hear from early learner classrooms, like here, mm-hmm. teachers, because what I do hear from my colleagues that teach in kindergarten and even first grade. You know, I mean, I've always said this since the beginning of being a teacher. And my first position as a long-term sub in a first grade classroom, man, first grade teachers, and I'd extend that to kindergarten, but first grade teachers, you are the heroes.
Oh my God. Yes.
Of this education system. You are truly the ones who make it possible for any of us as teachers to teach our students, because essentially you teach them to read, you teach them to be learners in a formal way that we teach in schools. But Tim, when we come back, I really kind of, we can talk more about this. I'm concerned about what this mandatory testing at a young age does to time that teachers are spending with young people, and then how it takes out teacher expertise and the knowledge that teachers have in real time to respond to what learners need to be better readers. So that's kind of my interest when we come back, maybe talk about, I wonder how teachers are experiencing this.
We're back. Busted Pencils fully. Leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education, talking literacy education. You know, in other words, why can't those darn kids read? And what the heck are teachers doing anyway to help our kids learn to read? Because in Wisconsin, at least according to some reports, over one third of 4K through third graders are at risk of not being able to read. We've kind of brought it to, oh my God, the headline scares my neighbor into believing kids can't read. Teachers are feeling like, oh my God, who put that out there? We're working our butts off. Johnny, even we said last segment, holy crap, so many teachers have been caught up in this testing and assessment of spending so much time, quote, gathering data on whether kids can read or whether they're about to read, whether they're at risk of never reading, and even going like, God, I wish I just had some darn time to teach, because maybe that might actually have an effect on the literacy rate if we actually taught instead of tested. And man, I've only been saying that for over 20 years. When you're testing kids, you ain't teaching them. Just put that out there as a fact. And I know ain't a word, but it works perfectly well for now. But Johnny, all of this though comes together, and we put this in the article here too, is that, and this is where I'll come back to saying the headline causes hysteria. The hysteria causes anger and lots of voices, and those lots of voices then inform their legislators, and then their legislators react because we're in a democracy and they're like, hey, we got to do something about this. And in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's not alone, we have covered this in so many different shows, quote, because actually, Wisconsin, you're not alone in your one third of kids not potentially being able to read. Actually, the entire country's at risk for this. And everybody's been yelling and screaming, and the solution has been a mandated curriculum called the Science of Reading. Man, Matt Damon's mom, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, has been on to help us understand what that's all about. But in Wisconsin, Johnny, that came forward in 2023, Wisconsin Act 20,
yep,
which made major changes to literacy education in the state. I will say it's nice that they didn't put the Science of Reading in here, but actually Wisconsin Act 20 pretty much mandates that those changes
phonics
are
based.
Yeah, phonics based, yeah. Science of Reading. That's the solution to all the kids who are at risk. And again, whatever at risk means. And Johnny, this is where it's like, okay, look, understand. And this is where I get, you know, really, yeah, kind of frustrated. It's like, well, what is, quote, the science of reading? Johnny, you put it out there, phonics, other shows. I'm like, okay, so in other words, if we just taught kids to read the way we taught in the 50s, all kids could read, because actually all kids could read in the 50s, which is nonsense. But the other part of this is going, here's the civics lesson here that I think that my neighbor and everybody else out there is, where did the effort to mandate a certain, quote, technique and actually ends up being a curriculum? Well, curriculum makers themselves have been the main lobbyists in our legislation houses of trying to figure out what the people best need, have been the ones advocating for laws that mandate that only their product can be used. And this is where it's like, wait a minute. So like the alphabet I have hanging in my classroom wasn't manufactured by a science of reading curriculum maker. You're saying my alphabet doesn't work anymore? Well, I know that sounds extreme, but yeah, kind of. That's what they're saying. It's like, if you're not teaching with the mandated science of reading curriculum, then and in other states where this is incredibly oppressive, teachers can actually be fired for not teaching science of reading, which could be dibbles and fluency of nonsense words that my daughter was, you know, exposed to. And think about the ramifications of that. So, John, bringing that all to saying, this is why this story that keeps coming up about kids can't read, it's not that we're not worried about kids that can't read. We are. And in fact, we know that's out there. But from an evidence standpoint, I'd say this, the number one cause of, quote, whatever at risk for reading is, it's lack of food or food insecurity. It is lack of shelter, good housing, lack of health care, and some form of safety in the situation in which they live. And one of the biggest indicators, lack of access, not to nonsense words, but lack of access to just books in general. And I really wish that we would get to be talking about those issues, because, and in fact, the number of books, and I think on another show, we gave Dolly Parton, you know, our most favorite status, because she's the one person out there dedicating her time and all of her charity to making sure kids in poverty have books in the house, because that is one of the biggest, most incredibly effective influences on helping kids learn to read. I don't know. Is that what you wanted me to say, Johnny?
I mean, it sounds, that's exactly what I wanted. Cause I felt like, Tim, is this just more of the same, like the headline, kids are failing, you know, which immediately it seems so disrespectful to teachers and so disrespectful to young learners. Like, what, like, where does this come from? And I said, didn't we specifically cover this and have shows again and again on it? And yes, you reminded me, Act 20 in Wisconsin, it was 2023. And I believe we had some great guests come on afterward, especially from the, you know, Wisconsin Public Education Network.
Yeah.
Right. And then there were WEAC folks. And I mean, just again and again, reminding me that, you know, Act 20 was kind of like, from an educator's perspective, which we are educated educators, deeply flawed law that was more about, you know, pushing forward canned curriculum and mandated large scale assessments and curriculums that every school would have to do and have to use. And, you know, it really was disrespectful to public school educators, mm-hmm. right? Sent the sentiment that they were in some way not committed to, you know, teaching students to read, or that they weren't working in the best interest of fostering lifelong joy of being a reader, right? These are things. That's why I come back around to this. I have talked, and this is all anecdotal. Like, we've been, you know, giving you facts from reports and, you know, going back to the moment we were reporting early on the act. But anecdotally, Tim, over the last few years, like since then, and Wisconsin's not alone, and this is happening in states all around the country, that I talk to kindergarten teachers, first grade teachers, especially kindergarten teachers and preschool teachers, early learners, who say, "Ugh, I am doing so much testing with these kids that it's just not the same. There's less time for play-based learning. There's less time for, you know, just the kinds of ways we had been teaching." And I'm concerned about that, Tim, because, you know, I don't think it's important and necessary for a four-year-old to spend a big chunk of their day being tested or to have their teacher tied up administering tests, you know? So I am more interested in hearing from veteran teachers and even new teachers who are, you know, literacy experts to say, you know, what are the things that you know and do to help young people learn to read? Tune out, science of reading. All the legislators seem to have the answers, right? And it's, here, buy this product. Everybody use this curriculum. It's called Science of Reading, even though it's not scientific. It's just a brand name called Science of Reading. You know, so I think hearing from teachers more on this, hearing from literacy, you know, literacy professors, I think we'll put the invite out. We've had them on the show.
Early childhood educators, Denisha Jones from defending the early years, right? You know, those people.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, and let's continue the conversation, because I know that even though it's my job to kind of digest educational information on a regular basis as an education scholar and, you know, as a busted pencils guy, let's bust some pencils together. But you know, my neighbor, and even when I'm like a neighbor, because I am often, I hear news about our schools and I think, oh my gosh, these kids that are oftentimes, you know, right outside playing or, you know, in our neighborhoods, are they somehow worse off? Are they not potentially going to be as good as we were? Like, is this common to, like, are we just making things up sometimes to kind of put them behind before they even start their kindergartners, for Christ's sakes? So I don't know, Tim, that's kind of where I'm at with it. You know, I want to hear more early educators talking about how has administering this, how has it changed the classroom for them, and what do they think about it? Because they certainly weren't included on the mandate.
But man, I mean, you just hit it so hard, because when you talk to truly early educators who have been in this, the ones, and again, you say anecdotally, but I know they, you know, would say that, no, this is, you know, pretty much the plurality of us would say, stop the assessing of babies. Okay. They're babies. Three of them. Please give them more time. And oh my God, Johnny, be prepared. Let them play. Because guess what? Play actually is really good at fostering early reading. Who knew that making mud pies and chasing your friend around in the backyard, or drawing and painting and making a mess with, you know, food coloring and things like that, all of those things, it's actually not play the way we think about it. That is the most crucial aspect of early childhood, is the ability to have access to stimulating activities, materials, experiences that happen through play. And if you're a great early childhood institution, early childhood learner, you know that spending 45 minutes assessing three-year-olds on how fast they can read nonsense words, guess what? That's actually harmful. to early childhood learning. They need to be playing, man. So, boy, there's a lot here. And holy crap, we didn't even get to the public schooling advocacy. We'll try it when we get back. Almost time, but hold on. It's a little bit more of Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board. Woo. Me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Man, coming up. And speaking of which, Jacob, chairman of the board, you've just been kind of sitting back absorbing this one, my friend.
I have.
Like a sponge.
So
absorbing it.
So what say you on this topic, my friend?
Well, Tim, as an uneducated non-educator, and I like to consider myself a layman, okay. I've got one question for you as an average Joe. Right. And I don't want to brag. I don't want to sound like a coastal elite here. But the truth is, Tim, that I do know what sound letters make. Okay, I'm not trying to be, oh, look at Jacob, he knows all these things, but I do know what sounds the letters make. Why are you so against it, Tim? Is that what this is all about? You really just don't want kids to know what sound the letters make, or is there more to learning how to read than just knowing about the letter sounds? I mean, you can tell me, Tim, because I think a lot of us out here, people like me, we love our letters. You know, what do you got against letters?
I got nothing, man. Back in the day, Letterman. Okay, one of my favorite episodes of PBS. Yeah, Letterman. I like me some letters.
Look, Tim, I've got my pen here. Yeah. I just threw it through the glass behind me. David Letterman.
Not that Letterman.
That's the one I like, though.
No, I'm talking about Letterman from The Electric Company. One of the classic PBS shows, Letterman.
Bring me the power, well, Tim.
Here we go. So here, I got nothing against letters, but as one of my early learning to teach reading professors demonstrated for us, we can teach kids what the letter B says. It says buh. We can teach kids what the letter A says. Letter A says ah. We can teach kids what the T says. It says tuh. And we can teach them that when you put B, A, and T together, that spells ba-at-ta. And ba-at-ta ain't a word. So does that make my point, Jacob?
Tim, I understand this canned talking point about the ba-at-ta you keep bringing up. But, I mean, I remember the Electric Company. They did do this. They're like ba-at-bat. So, well, I mean, what are we missing here between these two things? How do we teach kids letters but not have them end up saying ba-at-ta? Because I can agree with you on that much, Tim. I think ba-at-ta, I got no room for that in my education system.
Well, actually, too, you come back to it and say, yeah, we need to know those letter sounds to get us to being able to, you know, pronounce that out. But we need to then move it on to bat, the word bat, put bat in a sentence, put bat in a story. Actually, we need to, it's not about saying, oh my God, you don't want to teach that. You do. Yeah. But when you're only, quote, focused so heavily on phonics, the phonetic sounds, what gets lost? It's the whole word, and the whole word that then goes into an entire sentence, and an entire sentence that goes into a story. That's reading. And so I think maybe that's the other part here too, is that when we're mandating, first of all, prescribed curriculum that costs millions and millions of, my neighbor, taxpayer money, I'm thinking that instead of spending millions on teaching kids ba-at-ta, we might want to spend millions like Dolly Parton does and buy kids really, really great books and make sure that libraries in schools and also libraries in kids' homes are filled not with Baata, but books about bats. We're talking about bats for baseball bats, bats that were in my attic here when I moved into this house. All of those different kinds of bats.
Man. Bats that are teachers that organize to be a particular kind.
Badass teachers, right? There we go. Johnny's like, beep. Well, I think that one's okay, right, Jacob?
I'm going to look into it. I'll find it. I'll let you know.
Well, because we've interviewed bats on the show before, and I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, there's a lot here. So, hey, before you're worried out there driving around listening to Busted Pencils or in the in the garage with your, as Johnny pointed, I won't say it, you know, certain pants that you might be wearing, or if you're downloading the show, if you see a headline that says 1/3 of kids can't read, ask some more questions. Ask some of your other, like, is that really true? Is it really going on? Ask a teacher, ask kids, because it is something to be concerned about when kids can't read, but it might be that the reality is actually a little bit deeper and that some of the solutions we might be prescribing might have absolutely nothing to do with actually teaching kids to read and might be actually a handoff of your taxpayer dollars to some curriculum company that lobbied your senator or legislator. And now it's time for your moment of zen. I can understand pessimism, but I don't believe in it. It's not simply a matter of faith, but of historical evidence. Not overwhelming evidence, just enough to give hope. Because for hope, we don't need certainty, only possibility.
Oh, imagine the possibilities. So many. So thank you for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. And remember to grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or of course on Civic Media. Hey, don't you dare be late for homeroom on Monday. And make sure to catch us next week for class and session on Wednesday. And on Friday, of course, you'll find Producer's Choice with Jacob. And just like this weekend, tune in to listen to the Busted Pencils broadcast every Saturday. Your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny.